This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On this 25th of December, we reconsider the very emblem of Christmas spirit created by Charles Dickens and portrayed many times in the movies, on television, and on radio, including memorable performances by Lionel Barrymore.
I'm going to introduce to you a character I've loved for many years. Strangely enough, when you first meet him, you're going to loathe the very sight of him. He's mean and grasping. He's hard-hearted and tight-fisted. As miserable an old windbag as ever faked a sneeze when the collection plate goes by. He'll probably remind many of you of your landlord. But you, as I did and millions before us, are going to grow to love him.
Dickens' creation, Ebenezer Scrooge, captured imaginations from the moment A Christmas Carol was published. It was the most successful book of the 1843 holiday season, and Scrooge, who famously wanted to be left alone, has entered more hearts in more forms than anybody except possibly Santa himself. This hour, we examine old Ebenezer in his many incarnations. Later in the program, Francis of Assisi is on the Talk of the Nation opinion page, and we begin a series that follows up on Newsmakers of 2006, and we'll start with Harry Taylor, who challenged President Bush at an event earlier this year. But first, Ebenezer Scrooge. Who's your favorite Scrooge and why? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. First up, Murray Horowitz is with us here in Studio 3A. He's the director and COO of the American Film Institute's Silver Theater and Cultural Center. Merry Christmas, Murray. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Merry Christmas. It's my pleasure, Neil. It's great to be back.
And who was your first film Scrooge?
The first film Scrooge for me, I think, was Alastair Sim, who was, you know, always, in many ways, the classic in 1951 British version of called Scrooge, by the way, not A Christmas Carol.
Really? Yeah. I think that's the one that most of us saw on The Late Late Show.
Right? That's it.
Yeah, I think so. But as you look through the many, many characters who've played Scrooge, we just heard a little bit from Lionel Barrymore, played him most famously for me on the radio.
On the radio, right. He never played him in film. That little clip was from a trailer introducing a version that starred Reginald Owen in the late 30s. But he's I think, my archetypal Scrooge.
Well, you mentioned Reginald Owen. Here's one of his Scrooge renditions, 1938.
Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older, not an hour richer. If I could work my will, every idiot that goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Buried with a stick of holly through his heart.
Well, the lines are Dickens's, you know, and it's I guess one of the first things we have to acknowledge is the genius of Charles Dickens. This is a major, major work of English literature. I think, if I recall it properly, that I think he felt that Christmas had sort of fallen into disrepair and was neglected as the holiday that we now know it to be, this holiday of joy and peace and gladness. And so he set about to single-handedly revive it, and he did with this amazing work of art.
And you have to remember that this is something that has gone through. We just played one of the earliest screen renditions of Ebenezer Scrooge, and let's listen to one of the more recent ones. This is somebody better known as Jean-Luc Picard, of course, the great actor Patrick Stewart as Ebenezer Scrooge.
Good spirit, pity me. I will know Christmas in my heart and keep it all the year. The spirits of all three Christmases shall thrive in me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, let me wash away the writing on this stone.
Good recording, too.
Chills. Chills and tears. It just never fails.
Is it true that, in fact, the spirit of Christmas-to-be was in fact, a Klingon?
No, I mean, it might have been Avery Brooks. It's amazing that you mentioned the number of, and you said characters, but character actors and great actors who have played this role. I mean, among the men and women, first of all, I think there are more screen versions of Ebenezer Scrooge than there are of Hamlet. You know, I mean, there's just maybe 40 or 50 of them. The earliest one I found was from 1908. And the latest one is apparently somebody's going to be doing a version of Christmas Carol in 2008. So literally a century of Scrooges. And here are just some of the people, men and women, who have played Ebenezer Scrooge, okay? George C. Scott, Patrick Stewart, Reginald Owen, you mentioned Tim Curry, John Carradine, and Vanessa Williams, Bill Murray, of course, famously, Michael Caine, Cicely Tyson, James Earl Jones, Cyril Richard, Albert Finney, and that's not even counting others who may be better known for their celebrity than their acting talent, like George Hamilton, Hoyt Axton. Tori Spelling played a virgin.
Wait. George Hamilton?
Yeah.
Hard to think of Scrooge with a tan that good.
Well, he played one of the vain Scrooges that we get in the modern updatings. You know, sort of the, Bill Murray has a bit of that in Scrooge.
Let's see if we get some listeners in on the conversation. Who's your favorite Scrooge and why? 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Let's begin with Mary Catherine. Mary Catherine calling us from Norman, Oklahoma.
Oh, my God. I cannot tell you how great it is that you are having this topic on today. And I wanted to share with you that when I was growing up, my favorite Christmas memory of my father was my father and I would stay up late every night before Christmas, and we would watch every version of A Christmas Carol there was. And we would exchange Christmas Carol theme gifts, and we would recite long passages from A Christmas Carol to the dismay of my entire family. My dad and I would have our fists raised and we would be shouting, "Business, mankind is my business," and it would just drive my sister and mother crazy. But what we determined was that we loved it, practically any version, as long as Scrooge was not played by a barnyard animal. We particularly hated the Susan Lucci version.
Right.
Oh, I forgot the Susan Lucci version.
But we loved Reginald Owen. And I think in later years, Patrick Stewart became the sort of the quintessential Scrooge for us. Because he was really a Shakespearean actor before he became a Starfleet commander. So.
And so this is more Lear as Scrooge than...
Yeah. But the George C. Scott version was also, we thought, really good. But as long as it wasn't played by an aging actress or a barnyard animal, we generally liked it. But thank you for having this topic. This is just the perfect topic for Christmas Day. And my dad, who is now deceased, is smiling somewhere about it.
Oh, that's great.
Merry Catherine. Merry Christmas. Thanks very much
Merry
for the call.
Merry Christmas.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And let's see if we can get, this is Ben. Ben calling from Mocksville, North Carolina.
Thanks for taking my call, Neil. Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas
to you. I have to say, Michael Caine is my manifested Scrooge very well.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't that the Muppet Christmas?
Yes, it was. Indeed. Muppet Christmas Carol, which probably is my favorite one next to Scrooge with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
But he really possesses, you know, Victorian attitude from the time, the very, very cold-hearted, you know, nature of many people from that era. And then, of course, you know, just how he turned around and became that warm man. He really is my favorite.
Well, Murray, one difference is we continue to see somebody like Michael Caine. You're watching him as Scrooge, and you still see Alfie up there, you know. Alistair Sim, that's all we remember of
that's
Alistair
true.
Sim.
No, that's really true. Alistair Sim. Although Alistair Sim was a great actor, and he was in a lot of terrific comedies, especially British comedies. But I think it takes somebody very – I mean – structurally and in every other kind of way. I don't want to get too academic about it. I mean, A Christmas Carol really is a comedy. I mean, there is a happy ending, and there's a lot of fun in it. And I think the best actors are ones who know how to play comedy in this role.
Ben, thanks for the call.
All right, thank you.
So long. Merry Christmas. And we also have to remember, Murray, that Ebenezer Scrooge has spawned a whole raft of other characters. And you have to begin with, of course, the great creation of Carl Barks and Walt Disney, Scrooge McDuck.
Scrooge McDuck is indeed, you know, I mean, that he's given his name to a whole character there and a whole line of comic books, I think.
And Uncle Scrooge. Who can forget Scrooge McDuck diving through the money bin?
It's true. And it's not just the miser. It's not just kind of a, to date myself, a kind of Jack Benny miser thing. There's a certain what do I want to say, just a nastiness that goes about it. So that if you think of other, particularly in at Christmas time, other Scrooge-like characters, my favorites are Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern in Home Alone. Mm-hmm. These are guys who are out to ruin Christmas. They don't care that it's Christmas. Christmas is a humbug to them, and they're going to see to it that it's ruined.
Let's listen in as they challenge Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone.
Merry Christmas, little fella. We know that you're in there and that you're all alone.
Yeah, come on, kid, open up. It's Santa Claus and it's Elf.
That's a great laugh.
You know, we mentioned Lionel Barrymore before, and even though he never played a screen Scrooge as such, in one of the Christmas classics, maybe the Christmas classic of all time, It's a Wonderful Life, on the screen, he plays the character who essentially functions as Scrooge.
And that, of course, Mr. Potter.
You once called me a warped, frustrated old man. What are you but a warped, frustrated young man? Miserable little clerk crawling in here on your hands and knees and begging for help. No securities, no stocks, no bonds, nothing but a miserable little $500 equity and a life insurance policy. You're worth more dead than alive.
Which, of course, James Stewart takes to heart, and thus the movie evolves. Anyway, as we go through that, interestingly, neither the characters from Home Alone and nor Mr. Potter are redeemed.
That's it. You know, redemption is the theme of the holiday, after all, isn't it? But I think the Grinch finds a measure of redemption, right?
I think he does.
Dr. Seuss's great creation.
But before we hear a little bit of Jim Carrey, let's remind ourselves that, well, Mr. Potter was not redeemable. And, of course, the Home Alone characters, they couldn't be redeemed.
No,
they needed a sequel.
They went to jail and they didn't even come out rehabbed, you know?
But remind us just how evil the Grinch was.
The avarice never ends! I want golf clubs, I want diamonds, I want a pony so I can ride it twice, get bored, and sell it to make glue! Look, I don't want to make waves, but this whole Christmas season is stupid, stupid, stupid!
The Grinch is Jim Carrey, or maybe it was Jim Carrey as the Grinch. I get confused sometimes. Murray Horowitz is here. We're reconsidering the emblem of Christmas spirit itself, Ebenezer Scrooge. When we come back from a short break, a defense of the old scoundrel. I'm Neil Conan. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. It's a Christmas edition of Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. Merry Christmas. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. He's been stealing the show from Santa since 1843. It's all Scrooge this hour. Our guest is Murray Horowitz, director and CEO of American Film Institute's Silver Theater and Cultural Center here in the Washington, D.C. area. And we'd like to hear from you. Who's your favorite Scrooge? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's go to Sam. Sam with us from Fort Lawn in South Carolina.
Yeah, Mr. Magoo.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, Sam.
Mr. Magoo, also known as Jim Backus.
That's right.
Jim Backus.
Also probably best remembered these days, I guess, for his stint on Gilligan's Island.
Yep, yep, yep.
Before that, he made the Joan Davis Show.
Right, I Married Joan.
I Married Joan.
And also...
I.
Right. And also a great dramatic role when he was James Dean's father in Rebel Without a Cause. But it brings up the whole area, Sam, of animated Christmas carols. And another terrific one is, I think, is the great Mel Blanc, who was Bugs Bunny as well as everybody else.
And a thousand other voices, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Sam, thanks very much. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go to, this is Bob. Bob with us from Jonesville in Michigan.
Yes, I'd want to nominate, of course, William Sterling Battis. He was a New York legitimate theater actor who recorded on 4 12-inch sides a monologue of the entire Christmas Carol as told by Scrooge in 1911. It is absolutely marvelous.
Hmm.
16 minutes distills the whole thing.
Murray, you produced that, right?
No, it was just before my time. I did one on a wire recorder, actually, in 1940. But, no, Mr. Battis did have a famous one, and we mentioned Lionel Barrymore's. There are some famous audio ones, including one produced by NPR with Jonathan Winters.
Oh, yes.
And it was, and he did almost all the parts, except he insisted, because he took it very seriously and did not want to make a mockery of it, that he have an actress play the female parts. And so the great comedian Mimi Kennedy did the women's roles.
You'll be surprised and amazed to hear we have a clip of Jonathan Winters performing in A Christmas Carol.
You may be an indigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are.
Thereby denouncing the ghost of Jacob Marley's first
That's
appearance.
Right.
Bob, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I think he was going to say, may you have a Merry Christmas.
Hi.
I apologize for
and
cutting
the same
off.
To you, Bob.
And let's go to Tom. Tom's with us from Susanville, California.
Hi, guys. I'm enjoying your show. I just wanted to say I was a little disappointed you didn't have my favorite Scrooge character on, and that was portrayed by Henry Winkler.
No, I don't know that one.
Hey, Murray!
Golly, where was that some Good Times version, or was...
No, he wasn't in the Fonz mode at the time. It was actually a made-for-TV movie, and I know he wasn't known for his great acting ability, but he really did a good job with... Scrooge, and that's one of my favorite memories of the Scrooge character.
I'm so glad you shared, Bob. One of the great things about the Talk of the Nation audience is I always learn something, and that's a new one for me.
And one of the great advantages of having somebody who can use a computer, we now know it was in 1979, Tom.
All right.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks, guys. You have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Bye-bye. We mentioned earlier, and I think also heard a clip of Alistair Sim. This is from his famous 1951 portrayal, Extolling the Virtues of the Poorhouse.
What can I put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous.
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, sir, that is my answer. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. Those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there.
And some would rather die.
If they would rather die, they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population.
Oh, melt that cold, cold heart. Joining us now is Professor Michael Levin, a professor of philosophy at City University of New York, and he talks to us from his home there. Nice to have you on the program today. Merry Christmas to you.
Okay, good to be here.
And what possible defense can you mount of a man who wouldn't give money to the poor at Christmas?
Well, for one thing, let's notice that most people don't decide to die. They do, despite their words, decide to go to the poorhouse, so... He's got a point. He's also, as he points out, paying taxes already, so this is a sort of double moral extortion. But the big thing to remember about Scrooge is all the good that he does, all the different things that can be built and all the merchandise that can be transported and sold because of the money that he lends. He's doing a tremendously good thing for society. Let's forget that Scrooge looks like Alistair Sims, and he has a pointy nose, has a rough voice. All that is just the narrator's art. Just look at objectively at what he does, and he's much more helpful to society than, for example, Bob Cratchit, who's obviously not worth more than the pittance Scrooge pays him, because if he was, he would be working for somebody else at a higher wage.
And perhaps in a warmer room. You can't heat the room, another couple of lumps of coal?
Well, once again, if Cratchit really can't stand the cold and there was somebody who would be willing to give him two lumps of coal, Cratchit would leave for a better situation, as Scrooge calls it, but that doesn't happen, so I guess that's as good as Cratchit can do. He should be thankful to Scrooge for paying him at his, as the economists say, marginal productivity.
But what about Scrooge's customers? The only ones we read about in the story are, I think, there's a woman named Carol and an unnamed her unnamed husband who celebrate in the story of the ghost of Christmas to come at the death of the old miser.
I know, that really sounds terrible. But look, you have to think about what the money that they didn't pay him would have done. I mean, they, first of all, the contract they signed with him was voluntary. They knew what they were getting into. But there were people waiting online for the money that they owe Scrooge. Let's imagine, to be very unfair, that Tiny Tim needs an operation that is going to be funded by money lent by Scrooge to Cratchit that he collects from Carolyn and her husband. And now, if suddenly Scrooge has a change of heart and says, you don't have to pay me, what's he supposed to tell Tiny Tim and Cratchit, that Tiny Tim has to die, or Sickly Sid, who we never read about in the story but is waiting for a loan from Scrooge?
So a noble entrepreneur ruined at the hands of a propagandist named Dickens?
Precisely, precisely.
It's interesting. I've got sympathy for Scrooge, but I don't think that for the reasons that Dr. Levin points out. One of the things that becomes really, really clear really early on is in Dickens' narrative is that he's not happy. Well, what good does it all do? You know, because the riches and the business and all the economic good that you say he's doing haven't made him happy at all.
Well, I don't know if that's really true, because he doesn't at any point in the story seem conflicted.
Come on, man. The guy eats gruel.
Well, that means he's very content with his lot. He doesn't go after spurious material things, fancy food. He's quite happy.
Yet horrified at the thought of dying alone and unremembered.
Right. And something's bothering him because he gets visited by spirits in the night.
Well, okay. I suppose, but that's really not essential to his being a business partner. I mean, maybe being a businessman. Right, the idea in the story is kind of the spirits deprogram him from his
right. Yes, that's a good way of putting it.
From the cult of cash, if
right.
you will.
Yes.
Right, but if you just subtract the things we associate with him, he seems like a pretty happy guy. He's alone, but doesn't seem to mind. He's very, very intelligent. He's not thrown by apparitions. He's very much in control of himself.
I'm going to, like, not agree but concur.
I think he's just trying to yank our chain.
Well, look, I have to agree. There's nothing like, someone used a phrase a couple of minutes ago, the redemptive, and it's not the phrase you use, but sort of the redemption is the emotional redemption. Sure, no doubt, but it does seem a bit unfair to pin it on a businessman.
Well, I don't think Dickens pins it on him. I mean, ultimately, it's not really Scrooge, I would argue, who is the villain of the piece. And when you get to the climactic moment, Dickens says, behold these two children. One of them is ignorance and the other is want. And you have to beware. Those are the people, those are the things that are going to undo everything, undo society. And don't forget, there's a little bit of Scrooge in all of us. I mean, who among us has not walked through a mall in a suburb and said, bah humbug, at some point in the last month? And don't forget, he had his heart broken. He lost the girl for his professional aims. And who among us has not lost something?
Well, I have to wonder if that really is very plausible. That is a kind of Victorian touch in the worst sense. These little speeches they give each other about you love gold more than me. I find that a little hard to believe. And I'd certainly like to know how Fezziwig finances. Fezziwig is the foil here, or maybe Scrooge is the foil to Fezziwig, contrasted with Scrooge for his generosity to his employees. But how does he pay for it? Does he lower their salaries? Does he jack up the price of his goods? Doesn't that put him at a competitive disadvantage? So,
Michael Levin, that bah humbug. Thanks very much for being with us. Happy holidays.
My pleasure.
Michael Levin, a professor of philosophy at the City University of New York, and he joins us today by phone from his home in New York City. Let's see if we can get Parker on the line. Parker's on the road from North Carolina.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Parker.
When I was 12 years old, about 1971, I was in a all-children's production of A Christmas Carol, and I played Scrooge. And it was actually filmed and broadcast on local television.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you know who Tom Savini is, who is sort of the Goremeister of movies these days, he was participating in the local theater, and he did all of our makeup for us. So he transformed all of these, like, you know, post-pubescent children into Marley and Scrooge and ghosts and one thing and another. So I have to agree that Mr. Magoo is my favorite Scrooge, but other than that, maybe I'm my favorite Scrooge.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Good.
Our producer reports that so far Magoo is getting running away with the vote tally.
See?
So anyway.
He's done it again.
Parker. I can't see it. Parker, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
The Goodman Theater's production of A Christmas Carol in Chicago is one of the longest traditions in that city. Joining us now is Jonathan Weir, who will be playing the old curmudgeon tomorrow night on the Goodman stage. Nice to have you with us. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to all of you.
And what's it like to play Ebenezer Scrooge?
It's therapeutic.
I get to vent a lot of frustrations and hostilities every evening, and at the end up happy. So it's not a bad day at work.
And it's a pretty big part.
It is a pretty big part. I've my seventh year doing this show, not consecutively at the Goodman, but I've played every role. It's a lot of other roles. It's my first year playing Scrooge, and it's been a real joy, exhausting, but a joy.
Have you played Fred, the nephew?
No, I'm a character man. I never was cast as that. I did old Joe and Marley for about 4 years, and I did Topper at the Fred's party, so turkey seller and all those kind of things.
I wonder, after all of these years, do you come away with sympathy for Scrooge?
I absolutely do. I think, you know, I certainly it's a job as an actor to enjoy and like his character, and I do like playing this character. There's much of this character I think understand it. I think there's a lot of Scrooge in all of us, and it's a universal theme, and I've really approached him as a man less and less of as a beast. I think he's got a lot of stuff he's never worked out. So,
So you're a method Scrooge.
Method Scrooge, yes. Stanislavski Scrooge. I don't know about that, but certainly, you know, it's been a joy to investigate those peaks and valleys.
And who in the movies is your favorite Scrooge?
Well, you know, I was going to go with Magoo, but no, actually, Alistair Sims is my favorite.
It's
classic.
Absolutely, because it's the one we all saw at 9 years old.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, and there's something about that creepy black and white film noir look of it all that's absolutely
you almost wish it would go into color when he throws open the window in the morning. Right. Yeah,
well, that would be good.
Yeah,
Jonathan, let me ask you, have you ever had anything off stage happen to you as a result of having been Scrooge for so many years? Any kids pelt you with snowballs there?
Well, no, I mean, actually, I said this is my first year playing Scrooge.
Oh, okay.
Actually, oddly enough, we had a Christmas Eve matinee yesterday, and it was a magical performance, actually, because there you are in the moment in the play, which takes place Christmas Eve, and you're saying you're living it in the moment. And we do something at the Goodman, which is Collect for a Season of Concern, which is the Chicago theater community's fight against AIDS. So actors go out and lobby and collect. And I was out doing this yesterday, and I had three little kids, probably 3 or 4 years old, just run up to me and grab my legs and hug me. And I thought, well, this isn't a bad day at work.
That's great.
It's been the upside of it. No, I'm fairly unrecognizable out of makeup and costume.
Jonathan Weir, break a leg.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas,
Merry Christmas, too.
Jonathan Weir plays Ebenezer Scrooge tomorrow night at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. He joined us there by phone from the theater today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Charlie on the line. Charlie calling us from Wichita, Kansas.
Hi, this is kind of a curveball, but I was going through some audio tapes here recently and discovered we had done a radio version of The Man Who Came to Dinner, Sheridan Whiteside.
Of course, he's Scrooge.
Oh, yeah, sure, he's very Scrooge.
And it takes place at Christmas.
Yeah, it does.
And I have another thing that I no longer have a copy of. We had a genius here in the 1960s on the radio named Phil Cope and his friend Dan Peluso, and they did a celebrity radio version of A Christmas Carol, narrated by Boris Karloff with Edward G. Robinson.
Wow.
As Scrooge.
Yeah, is this the end of Scrooge?
And Marley was Walter Brennan.
This is a great cast.
And Tiny Tim was Jerry Lewis. And Dennis Day is Cratchit. It was hysterical.
Nice lady. I just can't imagine.
Yeah, that's right. Charlie, thanks very much for the remembrance. Merry Christmas to you. Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get, this is Melissa. Melissa's on the line with us from Phoenix.
Yes.
Hi, Melissa. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
I am. Thank you very much. I've quite enjoyed listening to all this. You mentioned earlier about Mr. Barrymore not having himself played Scrooge on film, but he did a recording, and my father was the narrator of that recording.
Oh, my gosh.
And I still have it. And it was down, I think, on the Metro-Goldwyn label.
That sounds right.
In the 50s. And some time ago, I had the great pleasure of meeting Mr. Conan at my own cousin's funeral in New York.
Really?
In 2002. And Mr. Conan was a great fan of my cousin Haywood Hale Broun.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, sure.
And a great friend.
And I knew him, too. We were members of the Players together.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That's wonderful to know.
Yeah, he was great.
And so I've really had a wonderful time hearing all this, and I just wanted to share my
Well, thank
experience.
You. Thank you for reminding me of Woody Broun and his family on Christmas Day. Melissa, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
And Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to all.
And we're going to continue with a couple more of your calls about Ebenezer Scrooge. But we reminded you of the transformative powers of the play, the story, the movie, the TV movie, the radio show. Well, Alistair Sim, here is his transformation as he wakens in the morning to find that no, time has not passed. It is still Christmas Day.
I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. I've never... A Merry Christmas, Ebenezer. You old humbug.
You old humbug. We'll have more of your Scrooge recommendations, and we'll talk about some holiday movie recommendations with Murray Horowitz after we get back from the break. Also, the Talk of the Nation opinion page. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. Merry Christmas. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later this hour, it's the Talk of the Nation opinion page, and we'll check in with a man who famously challenged President Bush this past year. But first, Murray Horowitz is still with us, and we're talking your calls about your favorite portrayer of Ebenezer Scrooge. Let's get to some calls quickly. This is John. John's with us from Spokane, Washington.
Yeah, Neil and Murray, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
to you, John.
Gosh, I just found out about James Brown dying. I was actually humming Santa Goes Straight to the Ghetto. Anyway, hey, listen, one thing on Professor Levin's comment about, I mean, he probably knows Dickens' work, and after all, I mean, Dickens' work is really a critique of 18th century
capitalism,
fair economics.
Right.
I mean, I haven't heard anybody give a defense of that in this age of globalization. But anyway, let's put it this way. There's plenty of Cratchits out there in the markets we're working right now.
But back to Scrooge.
Yeah, exactly. My favorite is Sir Seymour Hicks in 1935 version of called Scrooge, which was the original name of the book by Dickens, and it was a film made in 1935.
Somehow that escaped me, Murray.
And Sir Seymour, before he was Sir Seymour, actually, John, made a silent version of it, I think in 1914 or someplace around
wow.
that. So it fascinated me and wondered if he'd made a little, you know, mini industry
career,
of playing
yeah.
Scrooge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that the 1914 one, was that a film?
Yeah. Yep.
No silent. Fooling.
Yeah. Yep.
Have
we don't have any tape of it, though.
You've never seen it, Murray?
No, never have, and I'm wow. fascinated by it.
Well, that's a 35 one, and I think what's striking about it is that you can see a few skylines of London, and remember, that's before the bombing.
Right, mm-hmm. World War II.
So it's set in pretty close to mid-19th century authentic London neighborhood.
All right, John, thanks very much. Merry Christmas.
All right, Merry Christmas to my family in Chicago.
Okay.
Thanks. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's see if we can get, this is Dave. Dave's on the road with us from Michigan.
Yes, Merry Christmas to both of you.
And Merry Christmas.
I just want to say Alistair Sim. The movie itself was just because of the sets, you know, were not the greatest. And so you use your imagination, and that's what I love. But that movie embodied, you know, a low-budget type movie, but it brought out the spirit of Christmas in you. And a lot of people are saying things, but what the whole movie embodies is that people can change for the better. And it's that type of movie to make change, you know, not just within people, but throughout the world.
Okay. Dave, Merry Christmas. Thanks for the recommendation.
Merry Christmas to both of you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. And let's see if we can get Patrick on the line. Patrick with us from Kingstown, New York.
Yes. Hi, I just got to say I'm amazed that no one brought up Bill Murray.
Well, we could get a mention of George, Bill Murray. But
thank
yes.
you for that. Cause,
I'd say for the traditional, George C. Scott can't be beat, and Bill Murray for the modern Scrooge. But I think for the traditional Scrooge, it's kind of like whoever was Doctor Who when you first saw it. I didn't realize quite so many people played Scrooge over the years.
Well, you know, it just teaches you that Dickens thought he was getting a bargain by getting paid by the word, should have gotten royalties. Patrick, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
All right. And Murray, before we let you go, we cannot let you go without hearing about some of the holiday movies that, well, not necessarily holiday movies, but movies that are out for the holidays this year.
Not a lot of real successful holiday movies, I think, but what a holiday period for movies. At our own theater, the AFI Silver, we've been having a great deal of success with Babel, a very important film. A film is a tough film, but it's gotten all kinds of awards nominations. I'm very fond of Stephen Frears' The Queen, about Queen Elizabeth and the royal family at the time of Princess Diana's death. Dreamgirls has gotten extraordinary reviews. Some people think it's a perfect film. People have used words like masterpiece to describe Robert De Niro's The Good Shepherd, which you would know a thing or two of. It's supposed to be the best CIA film ever.
And the longest.
And the well, they have a lot to hide.
Yeah, I
suppose. And Rocky Balboa. My son just said, oh, Dad, you got to see this movie.
Actually, I've been sort of looking forward to Night at the Museum.
Right. Night at the Museum has a great trailer and looks like great fun. There's also one that's now actually been out for a while, but I saw at the Toronto Film Festival that I think you may only be able to get it through Netflix, but it was produced direct to video. And if you like the twisted, obscene, but always humane sense of humor, so this isn't for everybody, of the filmmaker John Waters, who did Hairspray, among others. He's done a sort of film of his one-man show that's called This Filthy World, and you can look for that online. And there's some great pictures coming up early, in the early part of next year. There's a terrific film with Dame Judi Dench and Cate Blanchett called Notes on a Scandal.
Mm-hmm.
The new one eagerly awaited from the director Guillermo del Toro called Pan's Labyrinth. Stunning visual film that is not for kids. It's a fairy tale for adults. And I'm really looking forward to the second part of the kind of diptych that Clint Eastwood has done about Iwo Jima, Letters from Iwo Jima. And there are two terrific movies at opposite ends of the spectrum that I saw at the Toronto Film Festival. One is a comedy that's actually been, it's a British comedy. It's been produced by Tom Hanks, of all people. It's called Starter for 10, which roughly translates into I'll take cheese for 40, Alex. And it's about a quiz show in England, a lovely little romantic comedy. And then another really maybe masterpiece film about the Irish Revolution from Ken Loach, The Wind That Shakes the Barley. Those should be out in the first 3 months of the year.
And don't forget, Wordplay, now available on DVD.
Wordplay, what a film.
Murray Horwitz, one thing we can say at the end of 2006, Murray Horwitz will return in
2007. Thanks so much. Thanks so much. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy holidays to everybody.
Same to you, Murray. Murray Horwitz, director and COO of the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center here in the Washington, D.C. area. Good enough to join us here in Studio 3A today. The opinion page when we come back.